My topic and my task is to talk to you guys about four ways, or ways that elders can save pastors, whether that's vocational or not, and their churches. And just real practically, I would say this. One, there's wisdom in plurality. So here's how having an elder team can save the pastor, or the lead elder, as I would call them, and your church, is there's a wisdom that happens in plurality. I was going to read Acts 15 to you guys, but 10 minutes, I don't have time for that. It'd take me 10 minutes to read all Acts 15. There's the Jerusalem Council in Acts 15, which I'm sure you guys are all aware of and have read about. It's about this church in Antioch, and there's believers in Antioch that are Gentiles. And so in Acts chapter 11, we start reading about the church in Antioch, which is a beautiful church. They plant, they strengthen churches, they send people out. It's like the home base for Paul and Barnabas. They come and go from Antioch. But this church was started after the persecution of Stephen, and people are dispersed. They're dispersed there, and there's a lot of Jews that become Christians, but then there's all these Gentiles as well. And it's a beautiful, wonderfully diverse church that God uses to plant and strengthen other churches and to send out pastors from and church planters from. But there arises this dissension there in the Antioch region. And these people come down from Jerusalem, believers, and they argue over whether you should be circumcised or not. Holiness type of issue for the church. And Paul gets into it with them there in Antioch. And then Paul and Barnabas go to Jerusalem, and they have this conversation with the apostles and the elders there. You guys know the story, right? Then Peter stands up. Sorry, sir. Peter stands up, and he talks missionally about the implications of the gospel there in Acts chapter 15. They decide together in wisdom, and it says in the passage that there's a lot of debating. There's a lot of talk that happens. But they decide after Peter stands up and talks about the missional implications of the gospel and protecting the gospel to send a letter back to Antioch and what they should do. There is wisdom, and this isn't an exact example, but there is wisdom that is found in that plurality. Paul and Barnabas, Peter, the apostles and the elders both listed there. And so for me as a pastor, it saves me that there is wisdom with other elders in plurality. The truth is sometimes I don't see everything correctly. My wife, and I'm sure Sam's wife, can say that as well. There are moments to where I can get a little jaded or hurt and maybe don't see even the congregation the way that I should see them. And so there's a wisdom that comes in plurality, and there's wisdom that comes in tough situations, such as how should the church live, like was talked about in Acts 15. Also, two, a second way that elders save pastors in their churches is they promote unity by protecting the gospel. So there in Acts 15 again, they protect the gospel, they send this letter home on what the gospel is and how they should live, and it says they sent it, Paul and Barnabas, back to Antioch with two guys who are named Judas and Silas, and they deliver this letter. And as they deliver this letter, the people rejoice in Antioch. And there's actually even unity that is formed in Jerusalem. And so there's this unity that comes from them as elders protecting and promoting the gospel together. And it's this unity that comes because it's a group of men, these leaders, who are all on the same page, agreeing together, saying, yes, let's go forward. It's one thing in my church for me to say, here's what the gospel is, and let's protect it, and let's promote it together. But when in unity, there's this team of leaders at our church who are in unity together, it births unity and more unity in our fellowship, in our church. In our church, there's five elders plus me, and then our church is about 800 people. And so they know, though, when we have unity in our eldership team, and they can feel that from that team into our church. When there's disunity, and we had that in 2016, when that happens, it's felt among the church as well. And so elders can save pastors by that plurality of wisdom. They can save their churches by protecting the gospel, and it promotes unity. Also, I would say there's a variety of gifts that can be utilized to strengthen the body. Lead elders, lead pastors do not have every gift. I do not have every gift. My primary gift is preaching and teaching and evangelism. I do not have any sort of administrative gift whatsoever, and there's many other gifts that I do not have. And so you can utilize different strengths that your church needs. Your elders are gifted in different ways. In Acts 15, if you read it, Paul has doctrinal strength, very gifted. Peter has missional vision. Judas and Silas, it says at the end of Acts 15, they are encouragers and strengtheners of the church. They like come in and people rejoice at strengthening, being encouraged. And Paul and Barnabas, it says they stayed and preach and teach for 2 years. They preaching and teaching. There's a variety of gifts that can be utilized from your team that's going to bring more health to your church as you do this. And then finally, we've heard this a lot, they keep me in check, and it saves the pastor and it saves the church because the elders keep me in check and they keep each other in check. And so there's no loner ministry that I can find in the New Testament. Even if it begins as a loner guy planting a church, they're always raising up and installing elders and deacons. They're not doing ministry alone. Now I want to get practical for just a second. So here is something that's really helped me in the last, we'll say 4 years, to think about. Five legs of a team. I don't really, a five-legged table, you might say. Is there a such thing, Margaret, as a five-legged table? Probably not. This is what helps us as a church. I want to get real practical on saving the pastor and saving your church as well. And these five things matter, I think, with your elder team. So now I'm assuming that all of us are going to have elder teams. You may not, all right? But I want you to think about this. What matters is the individual elder's role. I have terrible handwriting. The leader's role. The team's role. Outside counsel's role. This is where you are learning, where you're getting instruction, who you can lean on in crisis. Could be Midwest Collective, could be Acts 29, it could be the Southern Baptist Convention, and then God's sovereignty. I'm not even going to pretend to be able to spell that right now. All right. And so this is very important for you guys as you think about, I believe, as you think about protecting the pastor and your church. All right. So each elder on your team needs to understand their role. There's an individual role that they play. All right. We're going to talk about that in just a second. The leader needs to understand his role on that team. The team needs to understand their role together. Outside counsel, hold on to that one, and then God's sovereignty. So what happens if you neglect these things? So we're going to talk about neglect first. If you neglect the individual elder knowing their role on the team, if they don't, I am very big on every elder needs to carry responsibility. Every elder should carry responsibility in your church. Whether that's shepherding, administration, missional community groups, preaching, teaching, they have a role in your church. And if they do not understand their role, they do not carry responsibility, what's going to happen is they're going to abdicate leadership, and it's going to become a senior pastor-led church again, right? To the leader or to the team. They're not going to actually be an elder in your church. They're not going to shepherd if they don't know their individual role and carry responsibility. The leader, if his role is neglected, now I would say with a lead elder that my primary role in our church is the main strategy and vision of our church, all right? And so there's all kinds of, the team plays a part in that, but I'm always looking forward and I'm always pushing forward. And so here's future ministry that we can do. Here's how we stay on mission. Here's even, you know, some strategy towards that. They start working it out, all right? And we come together. What happens, though, if a leader of a team his role is neglected or he neglects, what you get is ready, just pretend like that's aim syndrome, all right? Here's what I mean. What are we going to do as a church? Where are we headed? How are we going to get on mission? There's never a bullseye. There's never a we're moving forward. It's ready, aim. There's never a fire. And so what happens is, as that's neglected, and I agree with Zelmer big time on what he shared with us earlier, If that's neglected, there's never any decisions made. There's never any movement. And actually, the team becomes an idolatry. We can idolize the team. This is when I need to eat and not be fasting. All right, teams, neglecting. Neglecting the team. What you can do here is, if you neglect the team, let me grab my notes. You lack perspective, right? You lack perspective, and you also lack unity. All right, outside counsel. So outside counsel, churches will differ on how they view outside counsel. But I would submit that all of us actually do get outside counsel, whether it's from Plant Midwest, whether it's from Southern Baptist Convention, or churches that we have friends with and elder teams with. So my elders are really close and really good friends with elders of other churches. And we can lean on each other. Now, our elders are the primary authority in our local church. But we do at times need to say, hey, we're a church of 800, you're a church of 1,200. What are you doing that we're not, or how do we think about these eldership qualities? Or how do we think about these decisions? And so we have found some partnership with some elder teams and with some friends that we get advice from, and they actually can really help us during crisis. Or when we're just like, we're, as elders, we don't know what we're doing. Can you speak in? Now, we're the final authority in our local church, but we have this as like a safeguard. Does that make sense? When we don't know what we're doing and when we're in crisis. And so if you don't have this leg figured out in your head, even if it's not on paper somehow, you can limit yourselves. You're only learning from yourself. So you limit your capacity, and you also, who helps you when you have conflict that you can't make it through, all right? So think about conflict. You say, that'll never happen. It'll happen. All right, God's sovereignty. If you neglect God's sovereignty, and here's the idea with this. We can know the individual team's role. The leader can be working, right? The teams can be thinking together and moving together. Outside counsel, hey, we got it, but sometimes, right? We start thinking about all of these things, and we still don't know what to do. And so we have to trust the sovereignty of God, like COVID. There's differences of opinion in our church on how to respond to that. And sometimes, or what's happening, what's God's doing, we just got to trust the Father in these seasons. But if you don't have this leg as well, that God is in control, and that you are under his sovereign care and hand, you can become very pressured. I got to get things done now. Self-reliant, arrogant, or shame-based. I won't write all that down. But if you miss that, really pressured or really anxious, if you don't lean on the sovereignty of God. Two more things. I won't write it all on the board. I wanted to get you the idea of this here. What happens if one of these is too dominant? Too dominant. So if an individual is too dominant on your elder team, he's going to hold the team ransom, right? So you got to listen to each other. What if the leader is too dominant? If the leader is too assertive, he's going to never get the counsel of the team and suppress the wisdom of the team. So he can't be too dominant. What about if the team is too dominant? Limiting, a lot of times if the team becomes too dominant, it means nobody ever makes a decision, right? And so it's this idolatry of plurality can result. There's a lack of decision making because you can never have a 5-0 vote or a 6-0 vote, right? We have a lot of votes that are, well, now it changed, but used to be 3-2 or 4-1, right? But if we waited, you know, we never make a decision. All right. What about if outside counsel is too dominant? Well, it's unbiblical. All right. And we'll just leave it at that. But it will also weaken the church. And then what if God's sovereignty is just too dominant? You're passive. Well, God's going to do whatever he wants to do. Or you just lack holding responsibility for the church. So where would I? This is how elders save me, right? And I think can help save your church. How can you think about when to defer in these moments? If people are too dominant, or you can be neglected or too dominant. When do I defer? This is something that's greatly helped us in the last 5 years. Individual, when should an individual elder's role be deferred to? Now, so for our team, each elder carries responsibility, and they have a primary responsible area. And so as we meet as elders, if they are leading and responsible in that area, it makes sense for us to listen to him, right? And defer to him. So my executive pastor, Randy Tebow, knows way more about executive things than I'll even ever think of. I'm never even going to think of it. And so there's me deferring to him a lot. In the rest of our elder team, we're listening to him. We're learning. We're still making decisions, but deferring. What about the leader? And so the leader for us, a lot of really small or medium-sized decisions a lot of times can be just given to the leader. And we defer in those times. Unless your lead elder is unbiblical, unconstitutional, or plain loopy, I think you should give them the freedom to dream, vision, and strategy as well. All right? Defer in those areas. Still speak into them, but don't hold him back or he's going to leave. Three, when do you defer to the team? Every large decision should be made together. every large decision you need counsel on and wisdom on. It should never be Ben, the lead elder, says, we're doing this and we're going. It's not going to promote unity. It's going to hurt the church. So what I would defer to, small to medium-sized decisions, individuals, leader, big decisions, we need the team. And almost every time, you go with the whole team, right? But sometimes there's that 3-2 vote or the whatever your numbers are. And then finally, when do you defer to God's sovereignty or outside counsel? When do you defer? I forgot this part. Defer. When can you as an elder team do that? In conflict? Seek out of my cupboard, right? In conflict or Zelmer or Byers. Like sometimes like we're really conflicted here, so we just want some advice. We're still going to make the decision, but I think this is important. We have outside advisory guys. Darren Casper is one of them. There's a pastor, Mike Harrison, he's in Farmington. He's one of them for us. We're part of a network of churches called Advance, and Brian Barr and Chad Rogers and Fellowship Jonesboro, and Brian Barr's in Houston, Texas, and then PJ Smythe is up in DC. These guys come in and out of our church, talk to our teams a lot. They do not make decisions for us. It is not imposed. But sometimes we do invite counsel from them because we've had conflict in the past and we've had moments where we needed it. So when do you defer to that? It's just when you're, a lot of times for me, it's just when you're in crisis mode. Give us some wisdom. We still got to work this out, but give us some wisdom. Hopefully you never get to crisis mode, all right? And then finally, when do you defer to God's sovereignty? It's when you work through all of these things and you have no idea what to do. You still got to be responsible. So until you don't know anything what to do, yeah, okay, we're going to put it in the hands of the Father. We're going to pray to him. We're going to make a decision. We're going to trust God, right? So this has helped save me as we work this out as an elder team. And I think it can help save your church. Our church, so in 2016, we had planted our church as a non-elder church, and we had some guys who probably shouldn't have been elders who, when we did install elders, just kind of moved over from our business board into our eldership church. Finally came to a head in 2016. We had three pastors move. They needed to move. They were called elsewhere to go. And we had two guys that when we said, we need responsibility from y'all, I said, we didn't sign up for that. And so then we had to rebuild our team. And as we rebuilt our team in 2016 on and installing elders who love Jesus and want to do these things, we've worked on carrying responsibility, what the leader's role is, what the team's role is, when do we need this to help us, and when do we trust God's sovereignty. And it has saved me, all right? Saved me personally. And our church is so much healthier from it. That's what I submit to you. Thanks, guys.